Meditation.
Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days.
I mean,
days
I just feel like the waterfall of thoughts. And every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York Podcast.
And I'm Dave, your host. Welcome back to the podcast. What is the intersection between meditation, non-aggression, kindness, and living in New York City, or living in any major urban environment, modern urban environment? What's the mix there? It seems like there's an incompatibility, perhaps. Well, that is the topic of today's talk. Forgive me, my voice is a little messed up. I'm getting over a cold. That is the topic of today's talk by Dr. Shante Smalls. You know her. She's a regular contributor to the podcast. If this is your first time listening, and it's your first time listening to her, you're in luck. This is a great talk that she gave at our weekly Dharma gathering just a couple of weeks ago on this very topic. Visit our website, nyshambhala.org, for all of our upcoming courses and weekend retreats. In particular, our introductory meditation course, which is called Meditation in Everyday Life, is happening in early December and again in early January. Go to our website to read more about it and to register. Great way to get started on your meditation journey. And now, I'm going to go take some emergency. Here is Dr. Shante Smalls.
I really was thinking a lot about the ways that when we sometimes think about meditation, or more broadly, the sort of now mindfulness movement, there's a kind of sense that we're reaching for something external that's going to make us better, and that we're not, you know, worthy, or we're not, we're broken, or at least we're scatterbrained, or we could be better. And that if we meditate, or whatever it is we do, we'll be like, you know, 2.0 version of ourselves. But Buddhism in general, and Shambhala specifically, really teach that we have inherent dignity just from being born. Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche called it basic goodness. When I first heard that phrase when I came to Shambhala, it both landed in this place that felt deeply familiar and deeply like I longed for something like that, and also the complete opposite of how I had been raised. I had not been raised to believe that humanity was basically good or was fundamentally sane or was fundamentally wise or was fundamentally kind. So I had this sense of, yes, that's that connects with me, and also like, no, that's not what I've seen or experienced or been taught. So it was this ambivalence, it was this paradox. And basic goodness started off as a, for me, as a concept. It's always introduced as a concept so that I can chew on it and see what I think about it, not something that I have to buy into or I have to believe. I can accept it or reject it. And over time, I have come to believe, trust in, experience the truth of basic goodness. So basic goodness is not good versus bad, or bad versus good, or good versus evil. It's a fundamental reality that whatever the situation is, it's workable. Even in the most confused, unkind, harsh, brutal situations, there is some wisdom trying to arise. And that the reason that we have confusion and violence and aggression and harm is because we don't know how to experience and work with our humanity. We want to be something else or at least somewhere else, right? Many of us, we want to, when you're on the subway car and it's rush hour or it's really late at night and the stops on in the tunnel or on the bridge, don't you want to be somewhere else? Or maybe you're not a fan of the Showtime kids and I was riding with a neighbor. We saw each other on the train and some of the Showtime guys came out. I love them. I'm like, yes! And he's like, I've been kicked in the face twice. And I'm like, that's crazy. I don't know anything about that. Like, I've never seen anyone kick. He's like, I've been kicked away, you know. So he was like hiding behind me. And I'm like. And there's this sense, you know, our whole society, particularly in the U.S., is built around us not being enough. Lose weight, gain weight, get this clothing, you know, take this, go on this diet, eat this way, wear this, move here. And there's nothing wrong with taking care of ourselves. Actually, if we're in touch with basic goodness, we want to take care of ourselves and others. But when we're told that we're lacking, and that if we buy this or do that, we'll be better, and someone will love us, that's not basic goodness. So I named this talk The Gift of Kindness because I'm very interested in what non-aggression or kindness can do for us. And we'll have a little bit of time to have discussion amongst, get to know each other. But the ground is this idea of basic goodness, sanity, wisdom, fearlessness, and strength. So I'll say something a little bit about my teacher, Sakyong Mipam Rinpoche. So I hope you don't mind me telling a little personal story. I grew up in an evangelical Christian household. And so my relationship to we didn't call them teachers, but to the pastor or to the leader, was not what it's like with my relationship with my teacher. And there was a sense that, in the tradition I grew up in, that, you as like just a regular old practitioner or parishioner, you were kind of just like, you didn't have it together. And this person was kind of an intermediary and would guide you. Which it's good to have guides. And before I ever met Sakyong Mipam Rinpoche, I read his father's books, and that's what brought me to Shambhala. And when I first saw a picture of the Sakyong and the Sakyong Wangmo, his wife, I felt this immediate connection to them. And I felt I wanted to know them and that they wanted to know me. And so over time, you know, I've been fortunate to be in New York. He does come to New York a lot and get to be in his presence and hear him talk and feel like, for me, he was the real deal, whatever that means. He was a genuine human being. He was an authentic person. And he's incredibly kind and very funny. And also very handsome. That helps. And very short. And the Sakyong Wangmo is incredibly precise and warm and beautiful and friendly. And their daughters, the Jetsuma, are little and cute and hilarious. And they're both regular and extraordinary people who spend all of their lives giving to others in a way that I find inspiring and completely beyond my capabilities. So this book just came out a couple days ago, and I've been reading it for a little while because I had an advanced copy. But I want to read this portion on kindness. There's a whole section on kindness, but in the first section, he has a chapter called Kindness Will Let You Feel Again. Throughout our lives, we are connected with others. First our parents, then our siblings, friends, teachers, and classmates. Then our partner, children, and coworkers. Our identity is a web of interactions. We are so interconnected that our relationships define us. This desire to connect is what we thrive on, and it is also what enables a society to be successful and livable. Through the Tibetan Buddhist warrior tradition, I grew up nurtured by the words compassion and fearlessness. Although my parents were forced out of their country by catastrophic violence, and he doesn't ever mention it here, but he was in a refugee camp for 12 years, separated from his parents. My father, Chogyam Trungpa, came to the West with the message, if we're going to go forward, there has to be an unequivocal conviction in human goodness. He was a smart man. He said, people are going to do stupid things, but we cannot let that undermine the integrity of the human race. Basic goodness for my father at that moment was no different from anyone else's. He was simply opening his eyes and seeing the beauty of the world and how all situations in life arise from vast openness. This is basic goodness beyond good and bad. It is beauty in the sense of fragility and totality. When we are willing to relax and appreciate that, we feel very open and vulnerable. Vulnerability and heartbrokenness are actually human strengths. Even if we hate someone or hate what that person represents, the heart connection is present. We feel something in relation to that person. Innately, we feel for others. Huh. So if the ground is basic goodness, the path is really non-aggression or kindness. And how we practice that is sitting on the cushion, first and foremost. We sit on the cushion. Maybe this, I don't know if this is anyone's experience when they first started meditating. I would sit, and I had a goal in mind. I'm going to meditate really well. I'm going to calm down. I'm going to connect with my basic goodness now. And I would sit, and you know, my mind was untrained. It was used to being seduced by my thoughts. It was used to believing everything I thought. So I would sit, you know, I'd get all my stuff ready, you know, all the accoutrements. Like, this is a very good tradition for me. I like bowls and candles and incense, you know, so I have that all set up, and I sit, and then my dogs would like walk by and start drinking the water from the bowls or eating the rice from the bowls, and I'd be like, God damn it, you know, kicking at them or whatever, get out of here, I'm meditating. And they'd be like, all right, whatever. And I'd sit and just like be like, you know, just my thoughts were so, they felt so sexy, you know? Like, oh, I have to think about that, like a bowl of cereal or whatever. It's nothing. Or I have to think about that person who I don't speak to, but who I'm going to give a piece of my mind with my mind in my own mind. And then, like, 10 minutes would have gone by, and I don't know where I was. No idea. And it was, like, shocking, because I thought, like, I could just sit down. And I began to take it a little bit more seriously. Because what I noticed was that I began to, the negative self-talk began to relax a little bit. I wasn't so, I have a friend who always says that she was, how does she say? She has this image of like being a kindergartner with her little backpack and like being stressed out, like with glasses. And, you know, I imagine her with like a big head and big glasses, like a little backpack and just a ball of stress as a young child. And I was like that, very wired for catastrophe. And I begin to have these experiences, very small moments that later got a little bit longer, of real connection to myself. And that, I experienced that as kind of spaciousness or being present. Not as no thoughts, but just as like a really big moment, like right here. The moment felt so expansive, so deep. And when I would get off the cushion, I would notice that I wasn't so quick to curse people out in the street. Oh, none of y'all have ever done that? New Yorkers? You've never gotten into a fight with a stranger on the street? Okay. I have. And I noticed that I wasn't so ready to defend. You know what I mean? My territory, which isn't mine. I noticed I could like enjoy things rather than being annoyed that people were messing up my enjoyment. There's a difference. I kind of enjoy rather than being like, if only those 20 people weren't on the street, I'd be able to enjoy this street. And so that experience of noticing the difference in me, just in my thoughts, just in how I approached my view, I became very curious about doing more meditation. And for me, getting more serious about being a practitioner. But all these unexpected things happened. I just felt like I was getting more in touch with my fundamental self, which is like, I'm a pretty happy person. I like people, even though I'm a little bit of the extrovert, introvert. I get a lot of energy from connecting with people. And I realized I couldn't kind of go through the world trying to control the world with my mind and with my thinking, and that that was making me miserable and I was making other people miserable with my misery. So maybe, you know, y'all aren't as bad as I was, but that's kind of where I was. And this message or this kind of view of basic goodness really begin to slowly seep into me. And I begin to experience less complaint. It doesn't mean I became nice. That's not how I describe myself. I mean, I think I'm a kind person, and I think I'm generous, but I'm no doormat. And kindness actually can reveal itself as actually quite firm and cutting. It's like the soft front and the firm back. You need both. They used to say it a lot more in Shambhala, but they used to say, you know, compassion is not idiot compassion. We don't step in front of a bus and hope meditation makes it not hit us. We learn, we use wisdom. We become skillful in negotiating, navigating tough situations. So meditation is the path to touching into this. It's the vehicle to touching into this sense of basic goodness, experiencing it. Like, and I can experience, okay, I'll give you an example, very recent. So I got an email from someone, or a Facebook message from someone I didn't know or recognize, and she said that we went to college together, and she said, you know, so-and-so is dead, someone we went to college with. And she said she never stopped talking about you. And the circumstances of her death seemed pretty not great. And she said her brother, her twin brother, wants to get in contact with you. Who I never met this guy, right? And, you know, my memory of this person in college is that she's kind of a pain in the ass, you know? Super sweet. It was a lot more rigid then, too. But I immediately remembered her face and her voice, and she had a very signature walk. And I emailed her brother, and I, you know, I said, I just, no words, right? Or this, the death of not only your sibling, but your twin. And he thanked me. And he said, Michelle used to always say, well, Shante used to say. And I just wept. That's basic goodness. In the midst of this incredibly devastating situation. And he said, if you want to call me, here's my number. I mean, the generosity of this young man who doesn't know me at all, except through his now deceased sister. And the way that we can connect with one another and help each other mourn. That is such an incredible experience, even though it's sad. It's not good, but it's basically good. It's fundamentally filled with connection and compassion and a desire to honor this person's life that ended tragically. And the fruition of this kind of ground and path is that we have some sanity, not only just in our own lives, but in society. And society is any interaction between you and another person or another being, that's, we're always creating society. Am I going to acknowledge the person who lives on the street, who's withstanding the rain and the wind? Or am I going to hurry past them because I feel weird when I see someone who lives on the street. Once a gentleman who I was talking to in the subway said to me, it doesn't matter if anyone gives me money or food. I just want people to talk to me. I just want to tell someone my name. And I said, okay. I'll never forget that. So there's a natural outcome of wanting to spread sanity. There's a saying in one of the practices we do, the Shambhala Sadhana, that even at the razor's edge of unenlightened society, there exists enlightened society. So you can think about war and catastrophe and violence on a grand scale, on an interpersonal scale. And even in those, the most unimaginable situation, there are people who are operating with complete clear sight and sanity. We make movies about it all the time, right? With a happy ending. There's always someone who's sane in insane situations, and usually more than one sane person, who knows that aggression can't win. So either we're going to have a revolution or evolution. So a revolution is always going to be violent, and it's always going to reproduce the very same things it's trying to undo. But an evolution, which can come from catastrophe, right? That's the greatest leaps in evolution come from catastrophe, is what's already there, right? We tap into it. And I say this because a lot of people I talk to feel so powerless and hopeless and angry and afraid. And those are human feelings, but we're completely able to enact enlightened society with one another right now. Does that make sense? Does that not make sense? Does that feel like, no, you're wrong? That's not possible, because that's totally valuable. And we are able, you know, we're all here, and there are many people that come here in other places, other people gathered in other sanghas and other meditation communities and other kinds of communities, talking about sanity. That gives me so much joy when I think about that, all the people who are trying to have some sanity in their own lives. So I don't feel any sense of doom and gloom. I mean, I'm not a sociopath. I understand that there are real material harms, and I can take action. That's not a problem. But I don't feel doomed or hopeless at all. As a matter of fact, I feel incredible amount of joy and possibility, because I know that even the most insane situation has a kernel of sanity, and we can grow that.
Thank you so much. I think what I wanted to mention was just something that I noticed in listening to you. I think you said something like, if basic goodness is the ground, then kindness or non-aggression is the path. And what I noticed within myself was that hearing kindness and hearing the words kindness and non-aggression kind of held up as equals made me realize that I think I tend to have a maybe a simplistic view of kindness. Mm. Like hearing non-aggression held up as an equivalent made me reflect on kindness in a different way. I mean, mm-hmm. non-aggression sort of implies choice and sort of a depth and a seriousness that I think I don't typically ascribe to kindness, which I might think of as like, oh, I'm holding a door or yes. I'm getting someone tea. But the word non-aggression has so much more richness. Mm. And it made me thoughtful about how I might consider both kindness and non-aggression and sort of how That's they great. Play out.
So, yes. Yes, so we're friendly toward ourselves and kind toward others. And that how we become friendly with ourselves really is through practice, befriending our thoughts, befriending our mind. And then we are able to be kind to others. And, you know, kind and nice are different. Nice is sort of like the social level, social niceties. But kindness is really synonymous with non-aggression. It's really like skillfully meeting the world. And kindness doesn't, as I said, always look like nice. The kind or the loving thing to do, the compassionate thing to do can be sometimes to say no very firmly. Sometimes I find when dealing with multinational corporations and their customer service that I have to go through a few different modes and I have to dial up. And sometimes I have to have really straight talk, direct, very direct, pointed talk. Sometimes that can include some curse words. And I have to say, look, here's the situation. And I'm not getting on this phone until we rectify it. How's that going to happen? And so it's interesting because it actually comes from a like authentic place. I always point people to the figure in the back, Mahakala, which is one of the protectors. So the protectors have a wrathful quality. There's like the, you know, the benevolent quality and light and the arms and the compassion and that. And then there's also the wrathful quality. They have swords. They have katvangas, you know, long knives. Because sometimes you need to cut situations. But it's compassionate. It's not aggression. It's not, get out of my way. It's, you need to move. And so we're kind of trained into being nice. But this is like skillful kindness, which is like because you practice, you're able to be present for a situation and see what it calls for. And it doesn't call for aggression. It calls for whatever the tool is, but it can be done without aggression. There are whole practices we do here, including taking on military forms to work with aggression and non-aggression, self-aggression and aggression of others. And you, what happens when you put on a uniform that looks like a military uniform with a bunch of meditators? Well, let me tell you, a lot of aggression happens. People get very upset. And it's very interesting to work with that practice and forms and drilling and hierarchy. And people are losing their minds because they're like, this isn't, you know, but that's part of the Tibetan warrior tradition, is creating protection and care, right? It's not just we meditate. There's also martial arts, right? There's also these forms of practice that have to do with externalizing compassion through being able to protect yourself or others. That's really deep wisdom. And that's counterintuitive to a kind of like, oh, if I just smile, everything will go okay. So kindness is, I think, has a spectrum, right? And we've reduced it to like being nice or biting our tongue or not, you know. But it really is, yeah, I would say it's synonymous with non-aggression. right? You're welcome. Thank you.
Just maybe one small comment about kindness. Maybe it has to do a lot with doing the right thing or what's the ethical thing to do, and it could involve standing up to somebody or being outraged at an unfair situation or things like that, which is not just being nice, it's being right.
Without aggression. So we have there's a slogan, be a warrior without anger. So it's like those things are usually opposite for us. It's like being a warrior, we usually think that's aggressive, but it's actually the tools of the warrior, fearlessness and compassion, right? Or your armor, you're a warrior with resplendent armor, except for your heart center has no armor, so it can be pierced.
Hi, just a quick observation. I was wondering, I know both states very well, being aggressive, mostly against myself, but also being kind.
Okay.
And so I was wondering, what is it that makes it flip, sometimes within one day? And for me, it's the connection with fellow human beings.
Mm.
I'm somebody who isolates and does sometimes shy away of being with people.
Yes.
And I noticed it is not necessarily always the deep conversations and the, you know, the scholarly something, something. I have this lady, a Chinese lady, next to the laundromat. And I like her so much. I go down, bring the laundry, and exchange a few words.
Yes.
When you say, oh, it's hot today, or it's cold today.
Yes.
Oh, it doesn't almost not matter. And there's something from the heart that really meets.
Yes.
And when I leave, I feel, it's just, it's really, truly wonderful. And I cannot tell you what happened, but it's magical. And I flip. And then after a while, the kind place becomes my point of reference.
Mm.
And that's how I know myself. And then I know, whoa, today I'm aggressive. And it used to be the place that I thought I was all the time.
Yes.
And I noticed when I was kind, and that was something very special.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that switch. Oh. Thank you.
Well, that was beautifully said and so deeply profound. The heart connection. When I moved back to New York in 2011, I had only been gone a few years, but it felt like forever. Anyway, so I came back and I remember I moved back to the same neighborhood that I used to live in, and I saw the same UPS guy. And I just, like, I don't know his name. I just, like, I like burst into tears. I was like, oh, this is so great. And I was just so happy. It was like, because we'd had crazy conversations. Anyway, he's a character. I don't see him anymore, so I don't know. He got fired. But the family that owns the laundromat across the street from my building, they're like, somehow one of the nephews knows what I do. And he's like, oh, you're a professor. Can you give? And we like end up having like a 15-minute conversation about college. And at first I was like, ugh, I just want to do my laundry, you know? And then he was like so nervous and sweet, and I was just like, come over here, you know? And we just talked, and those connections are the substance of our human dignity. It's like you said, they don't have to be, you don't even have to know someone's name necessarily, but you just, hi, my neighbors always say, good morning, neighbor. It makes me feel so good. Every day that they see me, hey, neighbor, hi, neighbor. It's amazing. It's so... Everybody in the family says hi to me, except for the daughter. She's scared of dogs, hey, neighbor, how's it going? Oh, you know, okay. How's it going with you? Well, you know, pretty good. Can't complain. It's pretty nice, you know? And there's that sense of, sometimes when I spend too much time in my apartment, I'm like, the world is awful. And then I go outside. I mean, it's like, I forget this. I go outside, And I'm like, wow, everything's amazing. I'm like, okay, really? Like, nothing changed. But I went outside, and I was like, oh, okay. You know, in my apartment, it can become like a cave, and me and my books and my videos and my dogs and my thoughts, my computer. And like the depression sets in a little bit, and a sense of me against the world. And I just, sometimes I don't have to go outside. I just open up the window and I look at, I can see the train. I have an outside train, and I just watch people, and there are people listening to music and dancing. I'm like, this is awesome, you know? My supers, his dogs are, every time I open the window, they want me to throw treats down to them. And I remember that I'm connected to all these other beings. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I come from a really strange religious background. Wiped it out. But I do remember a part of my favorite line in the Bible is that Jesus said was, the kingdom of heaven is amongst us. Bingo.
Right.
And sometimes I can be aggressive with other people. I can be bad. I hope I'm not evil. Good, yeah. Bad, but not evil.
Yeah.
And sometimes I can be loving. And that's when the kingdom, to me, kingdom of heaven, yeah, is right there.
That's right. And I think that we're, in many ways, there's this idea, even with something like enlightened society, it's like it's in the future or it's elsewhere. And it's like, no, it's right here. Like, I can choose. Sometimes I really feel it. Like, I really feel the choice, you know? Like, I'm like, I really want to say something nasty. You know? And it's like, which, I don't know, which one, you know? Because it feels a little good, right, to be bad. It like, feels a little ego, you know, pumps up the ego. Or even sometimes to think bad thoughts at people. Like, that person's a jerk. There's a guy in the dog park who I think is a jerk. And you know why I think he's a jerk? Because he never lets me say hello to his dog. He never lets my dogs meet his dog. So there's a yearning there for connection. That's the truth. That I could stop the sentence right there. Other people don't like him too, you know, but anyway. But there's, I kind of noticed it today. I saw him and I was like, oh, that guy again. He lets so and so. He talks, I see him let, you know, meet so and so dogs. And my dogs are friends with that. I mean, it's like ridiculous, right? And then I was like, oh, like I want to connect. And like the dog likes my dogs and my dog likes their dog. And I, you know, and I was like, I guess he doesn't like me or something. And I was like, oh, I just want to connect. That's underneath all of that discursiveness and storyline and whatever, ego, is just like a little heartbreak and a little yearning to connect. And sitting with the reality that person doesn't want to connect to me the way that I want to connect to them. And just holding that and not making up a story. I don't even know his name because I can't make up a story about him, you know what I mean? And just realizing like, oh, like I want to connect. And then that feels really good. And then I see that person in a different light. It's not like dread or something when I see them. It's like, oh. And then I have a connection to them because I want to connect. Just the wanting to connect is a connection. And that creates a different kind of reality than me kind of like deciding who's worthy of my time and who's not.
On the razor's edge.
On the razor's edge. You know, and it's like, which way am I going to go? You know, and that this is not a like prescription. This is a heart quality. So it's like I'm on the spot, and then I have a choice. It's not like, okay, in this situation, it's A, B, C. In this situation, it's X, Y, Z. It's staying open and vulnerable. And that means wisdom. There's wisdom in that, and there's daring, right? And there's strength. It's not like, oh, I'm just a little meditator who wants to be nice to everyone so that the world somehow gets better. It's like, I'm a warrior without anger. I have confidence. I have clear sight. I have joy. And, you know, this city we live in presents a lot of opportunities to practice. Whether it's the raccoons begging for food on your fire escape, or the people doing weird stuff, you know, or, you know, subway, work colleagues, you know, that's like challenging, so challenging. Family, right? You know, who ate all the food? Me. I mean, like, you know, it's like, it's just, I have to go grocery shopping again. Just like living is, you know, like Trader Joe's. Ugh, man. But then I'm in Trader Joe's and one of the cashiers says, oh, how are your dogs? I was like, what? How do you remember my dogs? So I'm like shocked into happiness sometimes. You know, shocked. Right on the spot. Just like my own bad mood or my own bad behavior can wake me up. Right? Like you were saying. I switch my allegiance from crabbiness and self-centeredness to, let me just look around. There's a lot of good stuff going on here, wherever here is.
Hi, thank you. We were in our group, we were talking about the speed of information being a source of aggression. And as you were just talking about connecting to people, I was thinking that it's not just people for me. I remember we're probably around the same age. I remember a time where if you didn't know who starred in a movie, you had to call your friend and be like, "Hey, who the hell was in that movie?" Or if you had to know what, you know, the gross domestic product of Zimbabwe was, you had to go to the library to figure that out. And I remember those times. I remember if it was an encyclopedia or a book, I really connected with it, and yes, I connected with that thing. And now those things are just, you know, here and gone. So it's that lack of connection. You know, I remember as a kid, like, reading encyclopedias.
Yes.
And I remember them. I remember the smell of them, believe it or not, what they smelled like. And, you know, I feel like the speed of information and the lack of connecting with information is what gets me, you know, aggressive feeling, you know, yeah, these feelings of aggression. And you know, with the speed of information, you're expected to be an expert in so many different things, yes, and to take the time out to learn about all these different, you know. But I don't think that our brains have evolved. I think that, you know, at one point humans didn't have language, then we got language, and that humans became different. Now we have fast information, mm-hmm, and I think that is equivalent to a new form of language that, yeah, we haven't yet evolved to be in our bodies in a way that we can deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, so speed is another form of laziness, right? Like not taking the time to connect. Or we're so speedy that we can't practice. We're so busy, you know, that we can't find 5 minutes to practice, right? But what's interesting is that every society, even if you look at, like, you read, like, traditional Buddhist Shantideva, like, I think, 7th century Indian scholar, I think it was 7th century, 12th century, a long time ago. And they almost say the same exact thing, that technologies of the day were so distracting, right? So when the printed word became that, the speed of how that changed the world, well, the timepiece, right? How that changed the world, or the printed word, how that changed the world, it completely changed the world, and people were disoriented. So whatever the technology of the day is, we're going to be distracted. Like, we're like, oh, a pencil, or oh, fire, right? Like, in my day, we just wrote on the walls. Now you kids stare at the fire, you know? So whatever it is, like, we're gonna, if you cultivate distraction, you're gonna be distraction. But, you know, there's still books, and books are still selling well. And we can also, you know, for me, I've noticed that I can give myself technology breaks. I know people like this. They're not Buddhists or practitioners or anything, but they're just like, someone I know, a friend of mine is like, I don't do any technology on the weekends. I'm like, what? I'm like, huh? And he's like, I don't, you know, maybe a little texting, but he's like, no. I'm like, that's, you know. So, like, at least there are at least 2 days a week I don't do any Facebook. Instagram is still my, I can't give it my, the gram. But like, I don't, and now it's usually like, I only do Facebook, like, twice a week. That's my, like, trigger. Facebook makes me mad. Twitter used to do that to me, but now I'm a different relationship with it. But we can readjust our relationship to technology. We're not helpless, you know? I'm like, don't sleep with your phone in the bed. This is me, right? Let your phone die. Let your battery die up. And don't charge it until the morning. That's very hard, but I did it this morning. So we can notice what our kind of traps are, and we can slow that down, you know? Like, I try to read books on the train. There's nothing wrong if you pull your phone out and play a little Sonic or whatever. That's fine. But you can just notice what speeds you up and what kind of brings you into the present and brings you into your body. And you don't have to, like, technology is actually really amazing, right? It's our relationship to it. It's our relationship to it. When we use it to substitute for the human connection. That's what we yearn for. You know, people having all this conversation is amazing. But then they don't know how to sit down and have a cup of coffee with someone or to sit with themselves. That feels like a failure for a lot of people. Oh, I'm lonely. Like, no one's, you know, liked my picture. Or I only got 50 likes on that picture, and that picture is pretty amazing. I may have had those thoughts from time to time. So I find there's something so, you know, we're lucky. We live in a city, actually, that can be isolating, but also we have a ton of coffee shops, and you look around and people are having conversations all the time in New York. It's not like that everywhere else at all. People are talking and in restaurants, and, you know, in big cities like that. When I was in Paris, same thing. Berlin, same thing. Mexico City, same thing. Dakar, same thing. So there's something special about the urban life, and sometimes we think about the fast pace and the rats and now the attack squirrels or whatever, you know, but we also have this ability to, like, just, I just started talking to someone on the subway last night because her kids were being so hilarious. And I was like, man, siblings are the best. And I was thinking about when I was young with my, you know, my brothers and the crazy things we would do on the subway. And then this woman and I just started talking and we were like, have a good night. It's so easy. We all had our phones out and then we just were talking to each other. And so it's a switch, you know? We're not doomed. At all, you know? We can put our phones away. But we've kind of always been like this. You look at pictures from the 30s and everyone's on their newspaper on the subway, you know, reading their newspaper, so. So thank you, everyone. And let's retire to the antechamber for cheese and snacks.
Thank you, Shante Smalls. Visit our website, nmayadachanbala.org, for all of our upcoming courses and weekend retreats. Our weekly Dharma gathering is every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. If you happen to live in or around New York City, come to our weekly Dharma gathering. You're invited. You can hear these talks live and in person. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. Email us at podcast@shambhalanyc.org. Your questions, comments, suggestions. Tell your friends about the podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Later.